Is there something wrong?
Warning. Life support failure on all decks. Abandon ship.
Maybe it is time to take command.
Bridge to Captain.
Join Jan Shaw, updating current events as only Jan can.
Library computer, data being received.
Produced by CosmicReality.com.
Hello and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Cosmic Creating Show. My name is Jan Shaw. I'm known as the Success Alchemist. You can find me at thesuccessalchemist.net, thewebalchemist.net, on Facebook and YouTube, Jan Shaw, the Success Alchemist, Twitter at Coach Jan Shaw. I'm now on Telegram, US-UK Patriot, and I've just got on to Truth Social using my desktop. And I'm on there as Success Alchemist. So please find me and follow me, and I'll follow you back. So today is the 25th of May, 2022. And the title of today's show is Texas Shooting, Sussman Trial, and Davos. And the question I have is, we've been having so many mass shootings under Biden's administration. I don't know if you've noticed, but we didn't have that number when Trump was in power. And the question is why? Well, of course, we know that the Democrats want to get rid of the Second Amendment. They want to introduce more and more gun control. And so, you know, I strongly believe we're seeing false flags here to enable that policy to be put in place. I don't think they're going to succeed in that, because the people that have guns are buying more, and they're certainly not going to let them be taken away by the likes of Beto O'Rourke and such like. But it's very interesting that, again, we've got a young shooter, 18 years old. The shooter was killed apparently by an officer from the Border Patrol who ran into the building and shot the perpetrator and got injured himself. One thing I want to look at, I'm going to read an article about this in case you missed it. I doubt you would, because it's all over the fake news media. And incidentally, the death count has been updated today. They're now saying there are 22 dead, which is absolutely shocking. Of course, Biden's being called out for using this to score political points, but there's nothing new there. And I'm also going to follow up with what has been shown to be one of the main causes for these young people to go off the rails and commit these atrocities, another word for it. So I'm going to start with an Epoch Times article, and this was actually originally published on the day of the shooting, which was yesterday, the 24th. It's now been updated. It's still saying what the original casualty count was, but it has been updated today. It's probably got the revised numbers at the end of the article. It started out as 14 students, one teacher, killed in shooting at Texas Elementary School. 14 children and a teacher were fatally shot by an 18-year-old male at an elementary school in Texas on May 24th, Governor Greg Abbott said. The male, who was identified as Salvador Ramos, drove to Robb Elementary School in Uvalde and opened fire, the governor said at a press conference in Abilene. Uvalde is about 80 miles west of San Antonio. Students who currently attend that school are second, third, and fourth graders. He shot and killed horrifically, incomprehensively, 14 students and killed a teacher, Abbott said. Ramos is believed to have been a student or a former student at Uvalde High School and is an American citizen, Abbott said. Ramos entered the school with a handgun and may also have had a rifle, according to the governor. The shooter is deceased, Uvalde Police Chief Pete Arredondo said in a separate briefing. Law enforcement officers are not looking for any other suspects. Local officials have shared little information, saying the investigation is active and they want to convey details to the families of victims before the public. They have declined to answer questions in the two briefings they've held so far, which each lasted only minutes. According to Abbott, Ramos was likely killed by responding officers. Well, we know since then that he was killed by a Border Patrol agent. Two officers were wounded during the confrontation but were expected to survive, he said. Abbott pledged state support for local officials who said are leading the investigation into the shooting. They'll be examining a possible motive, the weapons used by the gunman and how he obtained them. And again, I've seen reports that he actually obtained those legally soon after he was 18 years old. Uvalde Memorial Hospital, a local facility, said earlier it had received 13 children via ambulance or buses for treatment and that two individuals that arrived were deceased while two others were transferred to San Antonio. It asked for blood donations. University Health, a hospital in San Antonio, said it was caring for three patients. Two, a 66-year-old woman and a 10-year-old girl, were in critical condition. The other, another 10-year-old girl, was in good condition. The shooting unfolded at approximately 11:32 a.m. local time, Uvalde officials said. This was a tragic and senseless event today, said Hal Harrell, the Uvalde school superintendent. My heart was broke today. Representative Tony Gonzalez, Republican Texas, who represents the area, said he was heartbroken for the community. It is devastating when our innocent children become the victims of senseless violence. We are devastated, he said in a statement. While we monitor this situation, we remember that Uvalde, while rocked by today's events, is strong and resilient. In this time of trepidation, our office is always here to do whatever we can to help. We are family and we will continue to be here for each other, he added. Uvalde, with a population of about 16,000, is about 60 miles east of the US-Mexico border. And some of the news that's come out about this man that was responsible for this is that he had a very unhappy home life. He actually shot his grandmother before he went on this rampage. There are social media posts that are actually from accounts that have now been taken down, showing him looking like he's cross-dressing. So we potentially have a mental health issue here. And I want to link this to something that I learnt about probably a couple of years ago. And it was to do with the fact that I think in all cases of mass shootings, especially by young people, the perpetrators were either on or had just come off psychotropic drugs. And, you know, one of the things that I think is responsible for this is the fact that these psychotropic drugs can cause extreme aggression. And, you know, in many cases as well, we have the possibility of mind control, which cause these events to happen. And, of course, the perpetrators, in most cases, always end up dead. So they're not able to testify about the reason why they perpetrated this horrendous massacre. Now, this is an article by John Rappaport, actually. It's on the site thelastamericanvagabond.com, and it goes back to 2018, actually. But the title is Mass Shootings and Psychiatric Drugs, The Connection. I've been tracking the connection since 1999, when I wrote a long white paper for the Truth Seeker Foundation on school shootings and psychiatric drugs. The paper was titled, Why Do They Do It? School Shootings Across America. The drugs aren't the only causative factor, but they produce what I call the Johnny Appleseed effect throughout society. Sprinkle enough of the drugs among enough people and you get otherwise unexplainable violence popping up in schools, in workplaces. The psychiatric plague eats out the country from the inside. Here are excerpts from my 1999 report. The massacre at Columbine High School took place on April 20th, 1999. Astonishingly, for 8 days after the tragedy, during thousands of hours of primetime television coverage, virtually no one mentioned the word drugs. Then the issue was opened. Eric Harris, one of the shooters at Columbine, was on at least one drug. The New York Times of April 29, 1999, and other papers reported that Harris was rejected from enlisting in the Marines for medical reasons. A friend of the family told the Times that Harris was being treated by a psychiatrist, and then several sources told the Washington Post that the drug prescribed as treatment was Luvox, manufactured by Solvay. In two more days, the drug issue was gone. Luvox is of the same class as Prozac and Zoloft and Paxil. They are labelled SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. They attempt to alleviate depression by changing brain levels of the natural substance serotonin. Luvox has a slightly different chemical configuration from Prozac, Paxil and Zoloft, and it was approved by the FDA for obsessive compulsive disorder, although many doctors apparently prescribe it for depression. Prozac is a wildly popular Eli Lilly antidepressant, which has been linked to suicidal and homicidal actions. It is now given to young children. Again, its chemical composition is very close to Luvox, the drug that Harris took. Dr. Peter Breggin, the eminent psychiatrist and author, Toxic Psychiatry, Talking Back to Prozac, Talking Back to Ritalin, told me with Luvox there is some evidence of a 4% rate for mania in adolescents. Mania for certain individuals could be a component in grandiose plans to destroy large numbers of other people. Mania can go over the hill to psychosis. Dr. Joseph Tarantolo is a psychiatrist in private practice in Washington, D.C., he is the president of the Washington chapter of the American Society of Psychoanalytic Physicians. Tarantolo states that all the SSRIs, including Prozac and Luvox, relieve the patient of feeling. He becomes less empathic, as in, I don't care as much, which means it's easier for me to harm you. If a doctor treats someone who needs a great deal of strength just to think straight and gives him one of these drugs, that could push him over the edge into violent behaviour. In Arianna Huffington's syndicated newspaper column of July 9, 1998, Dr. Breggin states, I have no doubt that Prozac can cause or contribute to violence and suicide. I've seen many cases. In a recent clinical trial, 6% of the children became psychotic on Prozac, and manic psychosis can lead to violence. A study from the September 1989 Journal of Clinical Psychiatry by Joseph Lipinski, Jr., indicates that in 5 examined cases, people on Prozac develop what is called akathisia. Symptoms include intense anxiety, inability to sleep, the jerking of extremities and bicycling in bed or just turning around and around. Dr. Breggin comments that akathisia may also contribute to the drug's tendency to cause self-destructive or violent tendencies. Akathisia can become the equivalent of biochemical torture and could possibly tip someone over the edge into self-destructive or violent behaviour. The June 1990 health newsletter produced by the Public Citizen Research Group reports akathisia or symptoms of restlessness, constant pacing and purposeless movements of the feet and legs may occur in 10 to 25% of patients on Prozac. Other studies, emergence of self-destructive phenomena in children and adolescents during fluoxetine, Prozac, treatment, published in the Journal of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, 1991, Volume 30, written by R.A. King, R.A. Riddle, et al. It reports self-destructive phenomena in 14%, 6 out of 42, of children and adolescents 10 to 17 years old who had treatment with fluoxetine, Prozac, for obsessive compulsive disorder. July 1991, Journal of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. Hisako Koizumi, MD, describes a 13-year-old boy who was on Prozac, full of energy, hyperactive, clown-like. All this devolved into sudden violent actions which were totally unlike him. September 1991, the Journal of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. Author Lawrence Jerome reports the case of a 10-year-old who moves with his family to a new location. Becoming depressed, the boy is put on Prozac by a doctor. The boy is then hyperactive, agitated, irritable. He makes a somewhat grandiose assessment of his own abilities. Then he calls a stranger on the phone and says he's going to kill him. The Prozac is stopped and the symptoms disappear. The well-known Goodman and Gilman's The Pharmacological Basis of Therapeutics reveals a strange fact. It states that Ritalin, given for ADHD, is structurally related to amphetamines. Its pharmacological properties are essentially the same as those of the amphetamines. In other words, the only clear difference is legality, and the effects, in layman's terms, are obvious. You take speed, and sooner or later you start crashing. You become agitated, irritable, paranoid, delusional, aggressive. In his book Toxic Psychiatry, Dr. Breggin discusses the subject of drug combinations. Combining antidepressants, e.g. Prozac, Luvox, Paxil, and psychostimulants, e.g. Ritalin, increases the risk of cardiovascular catastrophe, seizures, sedation, euphoria, and psychosis. Withdrawal from the combination can cause a severe reaction that includes confusion, emotional instability, agitation, and aggression. Children are frequently medicated with this combination, and when we highlight such effects as aggression, psychosis, and emotional instability, it is obvious that the result is pointing toward the very real possibility of violence. In 1986, the International Journal of the Addictions published a most important literature review by Richard Scarnati. It was titled An Outline of Hazardous Side Effects of Ritalin, Methylphenidate. Scarnati listed over 100 adverse effects of Ritalin and indexed published journal articles for each of these symptoms. For every one of the following, selected and quoted verbatim, Ritalin effects, then, there is at least one confirming source in the medical literature. Paranoid delusions, paranoid psychosis, hypermanic and manic symptoms, amphetamine-like psychosis, activation of psychotic symptoms, toxic psychosis, visual hallucinations, auditory hallucinations, can surpass LSD in producing bizarre experiences, affects pathological thought processes, extreme withdrawal, terrified affect, started screaming, aggressiveness, insomnia. Since Ritalin is considered an amphetamine-type drug, expect amphetamine-like effects, psychic dependence, high abuse potential, DEA Schedule 2 drug, decreased REM sleep. When used with antidepressants, one may see dangerous reactions including hypertension, seizures, and hypothermia. Convulsions, brain damage may be seen with amphetamine abuse. Other ADHD medications, which also have a chemical profile similar to amphetamines, will be expected to produce some of the same effects listed above. The ICSPP, International Center for the Study of Psychiatry and Psychology, news, publishes the following warning in bold letters. Do not try to abruptly stop taking psychiatric drugs. When trying to withdraw from many psychiatric drugs, patients can develop serious and even life-threatening emotional and physical reactions. Therefore, withdrawal from psychiatric drugs should be done under clinical supervision. End of excerpts from my 1999 white paper on school shootings and psychiatric drugs. There is a problem. It is chilling. pharmaceutical companies, which manufacture drug after drug for mental disorders, are doing everything they can to cover up the drug's connection to violence. They use their lawyers and PR people and their influence over the press to scrub the connection. And now one typical disturbing official reaction to every new mass shooting is build more community mental health facilities. Obama was prominent in this regard after Sandy Hook in 2012. The implication? More drug prescriptions for more people, thus more violent consequences. I'll close with another excerpt from my 1999 report. It is the tragic account of Julie Marie Mead, one account of many you can find at ssristories.org. Dr. Joseph Tarantolo has written about Julie Marie Mead in a column for the ICSPP News, Children and Prozac, First Do No Harm. Tarantolo describes how Julie Mead, in November of 1996, called 911 begging the cops to come and shoot her, and if they didn't do it quickly, she would do it herself. There was also the threat that she would shoot them as well. The police came within a few minutes, five of them to be exact, pumping at least 10 bullets into her head and torso as she waved a gun around. Tarantolo remarks that a friend of Julie said Julie had plans to make the honor roll and go to college. He, the friend, had also observed her taking all those pills. What pills? Tarantolo called the Baltimore Medical Examiner and spoke with Dr. Martin Bullock, who was on a fellowship at that office. Bullock said she had been taking Prozac for 4 years. Tarantolo asked Bullock, "Did you know that Prozac has been implicated in impulsive de novo violence and suicidalness?" Bullock said he was not aware of this. Tarantolo is careful to point out, violent and suicidal behavior have been observed both early, a few weeks, and late, many months, in treatment with Prozac. The November 23, 1996 Washington Post reported the Julie Mead death by police shooting. The paper mentioned nothing about Prozac. Therefore, readers were left in the dark. What could explain this girl's bizarre and horrendous behaviour? The answer was there in plain sight, but the Post refused to make it known. So it's pretty obvious the effect that these psychiatric drugs have on people. And I was first alerted to this by an article which actually listed the shooters and the drugs that they were on or had actually come off very recently. I can't find that particular article, but at least I wanted to show the correlation between these shootings and these very much oversubscribed drugs. It seems that so many kids are being prescribed these drugs. The left, of course, the Democrats, go straight to the gun as being responsible, and therefore they want to ban guns. They don't actually look at the root cause, which is potentially these drugs that cause psychosis. And whether we'll find out whether this latest shooter was on any drugs, I don't know. But I did read something that a friend had said, that this young man loved playing these violent video games, and also when they were together playing a game, he had actually self-harmed, literally using a knife on his face. So it kind of links up with the kind of behaviours that are being described as the result of these psychiatric drugs. So we'll have to wait and see if anything else comes out on that point. But as John Rappaport said in the article, that kind of information is suppressed because, of course, Big Pharma controls the fake news media. So as I said, this situation is filling the fake news pages. And, of course, in many cases, the Sussman trial is being ignored. So I'm going to move on to that topic now. And I have an article from Just the News, and it's titled, Grassley says, New Durham evidence shows FBI misconduct, vendetta against Trump. I fear these recent developments are just the tip of the iceberg, key GOP senator declared in Senate floor speech. A key GOP senator who helped unravel the false Russia collusion narrative declared Tuesday that new evidence introduced by special counsel John Durham in a criminal trial shows the FBI engaged in misconduct to carry out a, in quotes, political vendetta against Donald Trump. Senator Charles Grassley, Republican, Iowa, gave his speech on the Senate floor on the same day that an FBI agent admitted during the trial of former Clinton campaign lawyer Michael Sussman that he is under criminal investigation by Durham. It was the first admission that current FBI officials face potential criminal liability. Previously, a former FBI lawyer admitted falsifying evidence submitted to the FISA court in order to get surveillance warrants targeting the Trump campaign. Incidentally, this was published yesterday. Grassley said testimony and documents submitted at the Sussman trial showed FBI managers, including ex-director James Comey, were, in quotes, fired up to pursue what turned out to be false allegations created by the Clinton campaign and delivered to the FBI by Sussman that Trump had a secret communications channel to the Kremlin back in 2016. The senator, the ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, said the FBI effort to sustain the investigation included wrongly claiming in official documents that the evidence for the probe came from the Justice Department, when it came, in fact, from Sussman, a lawyer for Hillary Clinton's campaign. By the looks of it, this FBI document contains false information, Grassley said. I fear these recent developments are just the tip of the iceberg, he added. The FBI's exposure to false information and actually using it for investigative purposes reeks of a political vendetta, a get-Trump-at-all-costs attitude. Whether Sussman is convicted or not, the evidence introduced by Durham shows serious government misconduct. Special Counsel Durham can't let government misconduct go unpunished. And Technofog, on his Substack channel, has also been commenting on this. He's been following the transcripts of the trial. And he actually quotes from some of the transcripts what was actually said about the leaders, the top brass of the FBI. I'm not going to read the whole of this, but I am going to pick out some of the key points for you. This was published, it says 20 hours ago, so yesterday sometime. How FBI HQ hamstrung the Alpha Bank investigation. The latest from the Michael Sussman trial. Today in the Michael Sussman trial, we received additional information regarding the FBI leadership's involvement in the opening and execution of the Alpha Bank stroke Trump investigation. This included FBI headquarters not approving an FBI agent's repeated requests to interview the sources of the Alpha Bank materials. First, we'll start with the examination of Tricia Anderson. Anderson is currently the Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Office of Legal Counsel. Back in 2016, she was an FBI Deputy General Counsel and reported directly to then-FBI General Counsel James Baker. The purpose of her testimony was to prove up her notes from a September 19, 2016 meeting she had with Baker, where Baker discussed his meeting with Michael Sussman. The notebook was necessary because Anderson didn't recall the meeting itself. Question. All right, and could you read the entire contents of 242 to the jury, please? Yes, that was the answer. Yes, it says Sussman meeting with Baker. No specific client, but group of cyber academics talked with him about research. Article this Friday, New York Times / Washington Post, and then it trails off. My pen appears to have run out of ink. Anderson stated she knew of Sussman prior to September 2016, but denied knowing he was an attorney for the DNC. In response, she was presented with an interesting email discussing an FBI meeting with Sussman, the DNC CEO, Sean Henry of CrowdStrike, and another FBI official, Cyber Division's James Traynor, to take place on June 16th, 2016. Question. Let's take a look at the email itself and I'll read it for you. It says, June 16, 2016. Hi guys, for your information, the meeting between AD Trainer and DNC CEO Amy Dacey, DNC outside counsel Michael Sussman, Perkins Coy, and Sean Henry of CrowdStrike is scheduled for 3 p.m. this afternoon. AD Trainer advised the meeting will focus on providing the entities with information relating to the FBI's efforts to date, as well as requesting additional information from CrowdStrike and the DNC regarding the intrusion. For reference, that meeting took place 2 days after the DNC announced on June 14, 2016, that it had been a victim of Russian hacking, and over a month before the DCCC said it had been hacked by the Russians. Curtis Hyde. Back in September 2016, FBI Special Agent Curtis Hyde was assigned to the Alpha Bank investigation in a co-case agent capacity. His trainee, FBI agent Allison Sands, was the lead investigator on the case. The case came from FBI headquarters in DC, specifically from Joe Pienka. While Heidi understood the Alpha Bank allegations came from an anonymous source, Hyde never learned the identity of that source. Question, okay. And did you ever learn who the anonymous source was that brought the allegation to the FBI? Answer, no. The Alpha Bank opening communication drafted by Hyde said it was opened as a, quote, full field investigation. He was ordered to open the investigation by FBI headquarters. Question, you guys were basically ordered to open the case, right? Answer, we were told to by headquarters, yes. Question, told, ordered, I mean you didn't have a choice? Answer, yes. Pienka made clear that the opening of the investigation was demanded by the FBI's seventh floor, including Director Comey, at the behest of Bill Priestap. Question, okay. And he tells you initially on the 21st, people on the seventh floor, to include Director, are fired up about this server, correct? Answer, yes. Question, and he says, did you guys open a case, reach out and put tools on? And if not, I will call Dan, as Priestap says it's not an option, we must do it, correct? Answer, yes. This is the type of investigation, as Hyde said, that employs all of our resources. As Agent Hyde explained, in order to open a full field investigation, we would need specific and articulable facts that a threat to U.S. national security has occurred or there's been a violation of federal law. This is in contrast to lower investigative levels, those for which the Alpha Bank allegations would be more appropriate, which allows limited investigative techniques to see if an allegation or an investigation is warranted. As to some of the Alpha Bank allegations brought by Sussman, question, now, Agent Hyde, what, if anything, did you find regarding these allegations and the purported findings in this white paper? Hyde, we were not able to substantiate any of the allegations in the white paper. The FBI's cyber division also discounted the Sussman white paper. Hyde, the cyber division were also unable to substantiate any of the allegations in the white paper, and they deemed that the information provided was not in accordance with how the Russians would conduct cyber activities. In fact, Agent Pienka, whom we have long criticised, relayed the cyber division's conclusions to Hyde, stating, question, okay, and so if you could read that first line. Answer, the first line is from me to Joe, and it says, I talked to cyber division, we're leaning towards this being a false server, not attributed to the Trump organisation. Relatively early on in the investigation, on September 26, 2016, Agent Hyde sent a message to Pienka requesting an interview of the source of the Alpha Bank white papers. By that time, Hyde knew the white paper was bunk. He received no response from Pienka. He repeated this request on October 3, 2016. Agent Hyde's requests were rebuffed by his liaison at FBI headquarters. And Hyde testifies that he never learnt the source of the information for the white papers and the data. And I don't know whether that refers, I don't think that refers to Sussman. I think it means somebody like Joffe, who was the head of the cybersecurity side of things. Regarding Hyde's background, he supported the initial efforts of Crossfire Hurricane and was involved in the George Papadopoulos case. He said he is currently under an administrative investigation by the FBI for intentionally withholding classified information in a Carter Page FISA warrant. Question: now, as part of the Crossfire Hurricane investigation, is the FBI currently conducting an administrative inquiry regarding that investigation? Answer: yes. Question: and are you being investigated individually as part of that investigation? Answer: yes, myself, and I believe others as well. Question: okay, and what did you then? What was the issue regarding exculpatory information as far as you understand? Answer: there were various consensual recordings that were obtained from one of the subjects, and there were statements, I believe, used in a FISA application that were the exculpatory information was not divulged to the FISA court. Now, the article goes on to debate about who could possibly be the other confidential human source that is referenced. And I've jumped down quite a bit, and I got to a point where it says, the CHS confidential human source is Joffe, who is relaying information from a, quote, reporter, if that reporter even exists. And then we get the testimony of Jared Novick, former CEO of Bitvoyant. Novick was a former business partner of Rodney Joffe at Bitvoyant, a company that focused on private sector cybersecurity. He reported directly to a board on which Rodney Joffe was a member. In August of 2016, Joffe gave Novick a task to dig up data related to Donald Trump and Russia. Question: and can you describe to the jury what that tasking involved? Answer: in August of 2016, he called me asking to look at research and data related to Donald Trump and Russia, and Russia and Donald Trump. Question: and was this type of tasking common or uncommon for you at Bitvoyant? Answer: it was extremely uncommon. It was unique. We never before did any tasking like this. Question: okay, and can you explain to the jury why it was unique? Answer: it was about we're a private company trying to help other private companies defend themselves. This was a tasking about an individual or a group of individuals, and it was in August of 2016, based on that individual, Donald Trump, as a presidential candidate, felt very political. So the whole thing to me felt like opposition research. Who did Joffe target? According to Novick, Rodney tasked me and I received a PDF document. And in that PDF document, there were, you know, a handful, 5-7 names of individuals, their home addresses, if they had a spouse, their spouse name and companies related to their spouse, their personal email addresses. So everything about the document was, it was very personal. The list included Carter Page, Sergey Millian and Richard Burt. The name of this project, they called it Crimson Rhino. Novick stated he complied with Joffe's request and cast a large net on these individuals using a 90-day history of data. On cross-examination, counsel for Sussman attempted to play up Joffe's qualifications and reputation. Novick had this response. Question: are you aware of the respect that Mr. Joffe had in the government communities in 2016? Novick: it's an interesting question because I do know some government agencies were suspect of Rodney. Now, that's the end of the article, but there's a very good comment from somebody called Judy Wisemonger. And she's actually started a Substack, but she hasn't actually put anything relating to Sussman's trial as an article on there. In fact, there's only one article on there. But she writes, from the very top of the FBI down, it was calculated and hidden from the rest of the FBI agents and the American people that they were working with Hillary Clinton to lie and hide the fact that President Trump was innocent and he had no relationship with a Russian Alpha Bank. But the top hierarchy and the FBI were going to proceed anyway with giving the nation's media false information to smear President Trump so that he could be set up to be impeached not once but twice. The FBI knew that President Trump was innocent in 24 hours. These are the facts. At least 50 people in the FBI and the Hillary Clinton campaign, including George Soros, who paid for it, should be frog-marched to federal prison and found guilty for trying to overthrow the President of the United States in a calculated coup using a government agency, the FBI, etc. If Hillary Clinton and the rest of her thugs are not found guilty and sent to federal prison, then there is no chance the United States will ever become a free democratic republic, because this corruption of government agencies and the nation's top cops and the FBI will be repeated again and again until the Democrats finally have a corrupt one-party state, because they will not stop. And now, hot off the press from Just the News, this was published today, Sussman billed the purchase of flash drives to Clinton campaign days before giving them to the FBI. The prosecution rested its case on Wednesday and the defense called its witnesses. Just days before 2016, Clinton campaign attorney Michael Sussman met with the FBI over alleged Trump-Russia collusion. Inspired by what he described as his desire to be a concerned citizen, Sussman bought and billed the campaign for two flash drives on which he stored data that he presented to the Bureau, a prosecution witness testified Wednesday. Special Counsel John Durham has presented evidence that shows Sussman, also a former federal prosecutor and DNC lawyer, was in fact representing the Clinton campaign and tech firm executive Rodney Joffe. The information in the drives that Sussman presented to then FBI General Counsel James Baker in the meeting weeks before Trump-Clinton election day was allegedly data showing a secret communications link between the Trump Organization and Russian Alpha Bank as a back channel to the Kremlin. The revelation Wednesday about the flash drives was presented by prosecution team paralegal Corey Arsenault, who has examined billing and phone records in the case. Her testimony came on the final day of the prosecution's case in a federal court in Washington, D.C. The trial started May 17th and is set to conclude Friday. In a Perkins Coie expense report that Arsenault discussed in court, Sussman billed the Clinton campaign for two thumb drives he bought at a Staples store on September 13, 2016, 6 days before his meeting with Baker. A disbursement form to the Clinton campaign from Perkins Coie, at which Sussman was a partner, states the drives were for the secure storage of files. The defense team also called witnesses Wednesday, including former FBI agent Tom Grasso, who worked with Joffe and said he considered Joffe a friend. Grasso also testified that Joffe gave him information about the now-debunked Trump-Russia plot, in addition to it having been channeled to the Bureau through Sussman. Joffe gave Grasso two IP addresses that he eventually passed along to the Chicago FBI office. Grasso said he knew that Joffe was a confidential human source at the time and had a handler, but he didn't go through a so-called handline agent. According to Grasso, Joffe didn't want his name revealed to the FBI because he feared for his personal safety regarding the allegations. Grasso also said that while he worked with Joffe multiple times before, it was usually regarding cybercrime and that it was unusual to work with him regarding counterintelligence. The defense will continue its case by bringing in character witnesses. Sussman's legal team had brought their first witness to the stand, former Clinton campaign lawyer Robbie Mook, on Friday, out of turn due to scheduling issues. On Wednesday, the defense also called former DOJ officials Tashina Gauhar and Mary McCord regarding notes they took during a March 2017 briefing of then-acting Deputy Attorney General Dana Buente regarding, among other topics, the Alpha Bank allegation. So that's the end of the Sussman trial information. No doubt Technofog will be covering today in another Substack article. So we'll see what happens the rest of the week, given that the trial is due to finish Friday. Of course, I'll be reporting on that on this Saturday's show. So let's turn our attention to Davos and what's going on there. It's very interesting what was happening in relation to some of our independent journalists over there. Jack Posobiec was actually detained briefly by police in Davos, and they refused to give any reason for why he was being detained. He was then released, but there have been images of policemen with a crest that says WEF police. Well, I didn't think we had a World Economic Forum police force, but you live and learn, don't you? I haven't been able to catch all the reports about Davos. Of course, you know, there's a lot of distraction because of this Texas shooting, as I said earlier. And but people are taking note of it, about this attempt to push forward the New World Order, the globalist agenda. But there is an article from Breitbart, and this was published today, actually. George Soros tells Davos elites, defeat Putin or civilization may not survive the climate crisis. Everything is about climate, 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 climate. While all these elites fly in on their private jets. Yeah, of course. Anyway, that's how this starts. Climate, climate, climate. Billionaire globalist George Soros on Tuesday warned that mantra should be the world's focus, not Russia's invasion of Ukraine, because climate change is on the verge of becoming irreversible. All of which is why Vladimir Putin must be defeated so the focus can return to the future of our planet, lest we will all be dragged into a third world war, he said. Speaking at a private invitation-only dinner in Davos, Switzerland, Soros lamented Russia's invasion of Ukraine is delivering a host of unintended consequences, as other issues that concern humanity, such as pandemics, climate change, and avoiding nuclear war, have had to take a back seat. That's why I say our civilization may not survive, he added, CNBC reports. And there's a tweet from Breitbart. George Soros says the United States and other transatlantic nations must do whatever is in their power to back Ukraine against Russia in the ongoing conflict overseas. He then specifically addressed the Earth's future and the need to, quote, preserve our civilization. Yet the experts tell us that we have already fallen far behind and climate change is on the verge of becoming irreversible. That could be the end of our civilization, he said. Soros, 91, is not alone in fearing for a future based on mass global conflict. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres previously warned the Kremlin's assault on Ukraine will likely have major implications for global heating targets. Guterres described any rush to fossil fuels as madness, before cautioning, humanity's addiction to fossil fuels is mutually assured destruction. Soros said he found the prospect of irreversible climate change particularly frightening. Most of us accept the idea that we must eventually die, but we take it for granted that our civilization will survive. And there's another tweet from Breitbart. George Soros's grant-making Open Society Foundations have pledged $20 million to underwrite President Joe Biden's infrastructure and social welfare proposals. Therefore, we must mobilize all our resources to bring the war to an early end. The best and perhaps only way to preserve our civilization is to defeat Russian President Vladimir Putin. That's the bottom line, he added. Soros is in Davos attending the World Economic Forum's 2022 general meeting. And of course, many people in the US are absolutely up in arms about sending another $40 billion to Ukraine. And apparently also there's another $100 million going to Ukraine as well. And we know that Putin is against the globalists, and the BRICS nations are actually moving to asset-backed currency, and this is having an impact on the dollar. And of course, the globalists do not want this. They want to destroy Putin, and it's all part of the one world government. If they don't, if Russia doesn't comply and fall into line with all the others, then, you know, that won't be achieved. So we know very well what the real agenda is. And of course, climate change is just a hoax. That's why all these elites like the Obamas and more have bought oceanfront properties when they're claiming that the sea levels are going to rise to catastrophic levels. But, you know, you can't make this stuff up. Now, interestingly, of course, alongside the Davos meeting, there's also this meeting of the World Health Organization regarding the pandemic treaty, which I covered some of that, I think, on Saturday's show. This is an article from AmericanFaith.com, and it's titled "Vigano Warns About World Health Organization Pandemic Treaty. Yielding sovereignty is considered crime of high treason." Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano released a memo on Sunday warning nations who are considering joining the World Health Organization's pandemic treaty that handing over sovereignty to the global body constitutes the crime of high treason. In the coming days, the nations that adhere to the World Health Organization will vote on resolutions regarding the WHO's management of pandemics, Vigano wrote. These resolutions will transfer sovereignty regarding the health of citizens to a supranational body that is largely financed by the pharmaceutical industry and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Vigano explained that should nations give up their sovereignty to determine public health decisions for citizens, unelected technocrats at the WHO will have unilateral control to impose more lockdowns, more vaccines, and Orwellian vaccine passports on a global scale. If these resolutions are approved by a majority, the WHO will have exclusive international authority in the case of a pandemic to impose all the rules, including quarantines, lockdowns, obligatory vaccinations, and vaccine passports, he wrote. It should also be borne in mind that this organization enjoys immunity, and thus its members cannot be either tried or convicted if they commit crimes. Unelected technocrats will paradoxically have more power than that which citizens confer on their representatives by means of their democratic vote. Given that the yielding of sovereignty is considered the crime of high treason by the laws of every nation, and that parliaments may not legislate against the interests of the nation, much less violate the natural liberties and fundamental rights of the citizens whom they represent, I believe that it will not escape anyone's notice that this attempt by the WHO to appropriate a power that properly belongs to individual nations is intended to impede any sort of opposition to the Agenda 2030, which in the field of healthcare also aims to accomplish the drastic reduction of medical and hospital services, the privatisation of the health industry, and disease prevention by means of vaccines. The Biden administration has signalled its willingness to sign on to the WHO's pandemic treaty last year when it approved of the treaty's draft resolution. Vigano has been a vocal critic of the Great Reset, the global vaccine rollout, and the deep state war in Ukraine against Russia. The World Health Assembly is convening in Geneva, Switzerland, on May 22nd through 28th to discuss the implementation of the WHO's pandemic treaty by 194 nations. And it does include the full letter from Vigano. It's actually onscribed. So it's interesting because I signed a petition a little while ago, and this petition then emailed on my behalf to all congressmen and senators. And I've had some interesting responses from particularly the Republican side of the aisle. perhaps it's not as concerning as we've been led to believe. But then I don't trust the Biden admin as far as I can throw them. We just have to stand up and say no to this. And I've got a quote from one of the responses that I received. The WHO's IHRs are aimed at detecting disease outbreaks and allowing the international community to work toward combating disease. While the Biden administration's proposed amendments are concerning, the WHO does not have the ability to enforce its regulations on the US health system. Individual member states can amend or ignore instructions from the WHO and can determine their membership status for themselves. President Trump demonstrated this in 2020 when he withdrew from the organization entirely. On January 18, 2022, the Biden administration proposed amendments that would add reporting language for member states when declaring a public health emergency. Rather than giving more power to the WHO, the very agency that worked to help China cover up the origins of COVID-19, we should look for alternatives to prevent future pandemics within our own borders through our elected officials. Despite warnings by doctors and health officials, the WHO did not verify nor disapprove of China's assertions regarding the severity of COVID-19 at the beginning of the outbreak. This organization's ineptitude in handling the pandemic shows that the Biden administration's actions are no more than a diplomatic messaging tool and highlights that President Trump was right to withdraw from the organization entirely. So I think also it's saying that there is no power in the WHO to impose any of the pandemic responses to the United States, because the United States really can determine what actions are taken. And in fact, Governor DeSantis in Florida has done his usual thing of standing up and saying a very loud no, and has actually announced that there is no way that he will allow any mandates to be imposed by the WHO on the state of Florida. Now, of course, if we've got Democrat-run states, then they may well kowtow to the demands of the WHO. But I think that's a good motivation to make sure you're living in a red state, not a blue state. So anyway, just about come to the end of this week's show. Interesting times, of course. The view is that we are winning, that the deep state is panicking. There are demands for Hillary Clinton to face justice over her role in the conspiracy against President Trump. I am confident that Durham is going to go up the line to the top of the tree, to the head of the snake, as it were. Whether that is Clinton or whether it goes to Obama, we'll have to wait and see. But I certainly think that we are going to see more accountability on this topic. So let's hope we do. So just as a reminder, you can find me at thesuccessalchemist.net, thewebalchemist.net, empoweredmanifestation.com. And I'd like to thank Nancy for producing. I'd also like to thank Derek Condit of mysticalwares.com for his sponsorship of Cosmic Reality Radio, without which this would not be possible. So I encourage you to go along to Mystical Wares to see the wonderful range of crystals and shungite, of course, huge selection, and other metaphysical products that they have in stock. So thank you very much for listening. I hope you'll join me for my next show this coming Saturday. And in the meantime, stay well, be safe, and bye for now.
You have been listening to Cosmic Creating with Jan Shaw, updating current reality, a production of CosmicReality.com.